And they thought that recognizing obesity as a disease would A, help alleviate this burden of obesity stigma and victim blaming, B, invite clinicians to do a better job caring for it, and C, encourage advances in treatments, pharmacotherapy and surgery in particular. And that's exactly what's happened. So the House of Medicine has responded, obesity is a disease. We should be doing more medical stuff about it. And consequently, even the American Academy of Pediatrics has said, bring it on. More drugs, more surgery for young people with obesity. Now, you can kind of start to read where I'm going with this, right? I don't sound particularly happy, do I? I'm not. The idea that we're going to let young people become obese and then reroute their gastrointestinal tracts in the operating room, pretty disconcerting. As a physician, as a public health physician, frankly, as a parent, pretty disconcerting that that's our attitude about this. But that, I think, is the byproduct of thinking of obesity as a disease. And the other byproduct is what's happening in the realm of pharmacotherapy, especially now. So I trust you've heard the ads for Ozempic and Wegovy and Mounjaro and all the buzz about these. These are the greatest blockbuster drugs, it seems, in history, so much so that Novo Nordisk, which is a Danish company that's producing the first group of these drugs that have had commercial success. This one company now has a bigger annual revenue than the country it resides in. And the GDP of Denmark has been irrevocably altered with the advent of these drugs. So Novo Nordisk, as a company in Denmark, has changed the economy of Denmark because of what's happening with these drugs. Just an incredible explosion. So obesity is a disease. Pharmacotherapy is the answer. Everybody gets drugs. Maybe you think that's a good thing, but I have my concerns. The story of these drugs, by the way, is extremely interesting. So this is the molecular structure of the first one, exenatide. These are drugs in a class called incretins. They have obviously a wide range of effects, most of which we don't understand yet. But the thing we knew about them was that they stimulate insulin secretion. So they basically they directly oppose perturbations, disturbances in blood glucose levels by facilitating the actions of insulin, stimulating insulin release, but also supporting insulin's functions. And the history is interesting, not because of the shape of this molecule, but because of the origins. Some of you will recognize this creature as a Gila monster. This is where the story of GLP-1 drugs began, in the saliva of the Gila monster back in the 1970s. And I don't know who the first people were to recognize this, but zoologists presumably. And by the way, this is a digression, but an important one. It's a shout out about biodiversity and how we are all in this together and how much we still have to learn from nature and how great advances for the sake of human health are apt to come not from some test tube, but from the wonders of the natural world and biodiversity. So it was noted that Gila monsters have remarkably stable blood sugar, despite the fact that they often eat only once a month. This is not terribly uncommon in reptiles. So they'll gorge themselves and they will eat. And following a massive meal, their blood sugar will not go up. And then they won't eat for a month. And at the end of that month, when they are in a famished state, their blood sugar won't go down. So this was observed, and people started asking why. And so this compound, exenatide, was ultimately discovered to be the explanation. And it was found in the saliva of the Gila monster. And everything that has ensued over the decades since has been a result of studying this compound, the first synthesized GLP-1, and now all the rest, and a whole family of drugs and modified drugs. But this is where it began. The GLP-1s that are rocking the world began as a product of nature in the saliva of the Gila monster. Very interesting. I trust you've heard there are concerns about both mild and more severe potential side effects of Ozempic and the other GLP-1s. It's a long list. Some of these things are pretty common and just inconvenient. Some of them are quite serious and thankfully, less common, but they do concern me. But the biggest liability of these drugs may be the cost, because we are a society that's already mired in very severe disparities. And I have grave concerns that if we turn to pharmacotherapy to fix what we could prevent outright with better use of feet and forks, it's going to amplify those disparities because these drugs are really expensive, and that's not going to change anytime soon. So the out-of-pocket expense, if you had to pay, is over $1,000 a month or $12,000 a year. Most people can't afford that, obviously, and certainly they can't afford it for multiple members of the household. And that's often the situation where everybody in the household needs to have help managing their weight. If we're relying on drugs, that's $12,000 a year for everybody who's in the mix. So without insurance, it's out of reach for most people. But even if you have insurance, insurance companies are starting to say, we can't afford this either. So even Medicare looks at this problem and says, this could break the bank. We were in trouble before with healthcare expenditure in the US. If everybody now needs $12,000 worth of pharmacotherapy for weight management a year, we're in really serious trouble. And remember what the prevalence is, right? We're talking about more than half the population in the United States. And over the next decade, we're talking about half the population of the world. So the potential economic impact of this, good as it is for Novo Nordisk, may be extremely dire for the rest of us. So I have real concerns about that, and in particular from the perspective of public health and disparities. But my biggest concern is this: those who don't learn from the follies of history are destined to repeat them. And we've had horrible follies in the history of pharmacotherapy for obesity. I don't know whether the rest of you remember this. I remember it indelibly. We had a drug that was generating very similar buzz to what we're hearing now about the GLP-1s. It was marketed as Acomplia. The generic name was Rimonabant. It was an endocannabinoid receptor blocker, and that name sounds like cannabis, and that's because those are the very receptors that are stimulated by cannabis, but they control pleasure and reward mechanisms in the brain. So very powerful drug operating along some very fundamental pathways and showing many of the benefits that we see now with GLP-1s. And this drug was approved for routine use in the European Union, not yet approved in the US, although the FDA was on the brink of approving it when it was discovered in post-market surveillance that the rate of suicide in the EU among users of the drug had doubled and the drug was withdrawn. The law of unintended consequences. When you start mucking around with brain pathways and brain chemistry, you really don't know what's going to ensue. We really don't know yet what's going to happen over years and decades of use with GLP-1s. We do know that if people take them and stop, they gain back the weight. So we're starting to think we need to use these just like drugs for hypertension or dyslipidemia or diabetes, where you stay on them for the long term. But we really don't know about the long-term consequences. I'm not saying this will happen. It's just a precautionary tale, and we ought to give it heed. It does make me nervous. But most importantly, my concern is that we're treating the wrong cause, because the cause of epidemic obesity is not human physiology run amok. Human physiology works the same way it always has, but we have a food supply that is unlike what we've ever had before. In order to account for a change, you need a change. And human biology is not what's changed here. I don't think that's what we should be mucking around with. What's changed is our food. Now, there are many vivid illustrations of this. I'm a big fan of Michael Moss. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, two great books, Salt, Sugar, Fat, and Hooked, all about the machinations and manipulations of the food industry. This is a New York Times Magazine cover story a decade ago, extracted from his book, Salt, Sugar, Fat. If you haven't read this, you just need to Google Moss Addictive. You'll pull it right up. I definitely commend it to you. This is the story of how major food companies have used cutting-edge technology, functional MRI machines, to design food we can't stop eating, at least not until our arm gets tired from lifting it to our mouth. Some of you, my contemporaries, will remember the Lay's potato chip ads, "Bet you can't eat just one." Well, they meant business. That was a threat, and one they knew they could take all the way to the bank. Moss describes what the food industry calls the bliss point. They manipulate flavor combinations, they manipulate ingredients, they manipulate textures to optimize the effects of this food on the ventromedial hypothalamus, optimize from their perspective. In other words, maximally stimulate the human appetite center so it lights up like a Christmas tree, and basically put us in a situation where portion control is damn near impossible. And in a situation where the calories required to finally cry uncle and stop eating are maximized. Why is that a good thing? Well, because if you eat more chips at any given sitting, you run out of chips faster, you buy more chips. That's a good thing for whoever's selling the chips. Not so good for you, not so good for the people you love. But if you happen to be on the chip selling side of the equation, a really good thing. So that's what's going on here. It's basically predatory profiteering. And that's what we're up against. When we in medicine and the health sciences are encouraging portion control, we're sending people out into a world where teams of scientists using functional MRI scans and with reams of corporate money have marching orders to design food. You can't stop eating until your arm gets tired from lifting it to your mouth.